Welcome into the Vandy Sports Podcast on the 440 Sports Network. I'm your host, Billy Derrick, alongside Joey Dwyer on a Wednesday afternoon. No Chris Lee, no Luke Wyatt. We're getting this out on a Wednesday still, but we still have a lot to get into. We've got baseball results to talk about, whether it's good or bad. We've got basketball portal pickups to get into, and maybe a little bit of football as well. We've got some mailbag questions to wrap things up as well. But first, got a lot of ad reads to get to. We'll start with Anchor Impact, Commodore Nation. You can get closer to Vanderbilt athletics than ever before with Anchor Impact, the official NIL collective for Vanderbilt University. Gain access to unmatched exclusive coverage and be a part of a one-of-a-kind community. Access behind-the-scenes content, exclusive events, unique merchandise, and personalized experiences, creating an unparalleled connection with the student-athlete's journey. Join the mission of Anchor Impact to support student-athletes and elevate Vanderbilt athletics to new heights. Become a member today and be part of this impactful journey. Help the Commodores thrive and contribute now by logging on to anchorimpact.com. Also, it is baseball season, and anytime we talk baseball, it's brought to you by the Murfreesboro Pure Milk Company, a family-owned third-generation milk and ice cream distribution company located in Murfreesboro. That partnership began over 50 years ago with Purity Dairy in Nashville to provide Purity milk and ice cream to consumers in Middle Tennessee, and they now serve Southern Kentucky, Northern Alabama, Chattanooga, and North Georgia. For more info, visit their website. That's mpmci.com. All right, Joey, let's hop into it here. We'll start with a little bit of basketball. We've got some hoops portal pickups to get into. I know you had your rapid reaction on Tyler Nickel, so hopefully fans have seen that. And of course, MJ Collins was added into the fray yesterday, kind of late last night, actually. I think both driving back from the Lipscomb game, and that's when I got the notification. So MJ Collins is coming to Vanderbilt as well. A couple of Virginia Tech transfers. We got some players out to talk about as well. Isaiah West, Malik Presley, Jamie Vinson has requested his release for his NLI. Not NIL, NLI, National Letter of Intent. I know you've got some info there, but let's start basketball. Where are you in this portion of the tenure? And again, no games have been played. I know there have been some negative reactions from fans, and I think there were some expectations that a few big fish would be landed by Byington, and I'm sure they've gotten some no's. You know, I mean, everybody does. That's today's day and age of college basketball. But Joey, with guys coming in, guys coming out, what do you make of what has happened so far? And even more specifically, just where the feeling is at with this program right now? Because for me, I've heard a lot of reactions. I'm not really here to go too far one side or the other yet. You know, let's play a game first.
Yeah, I think I'm at the point to kind of where I expected this to be. Like, I thought they would get good players in the portal, and I think they have. I think Tyler Nickel's a really nice pickup. I think MJ Collins, I don't know that I was necessarily expecting him to get him. I think he's a guy who maybe the efficiency numbers are a little more misleading than I had thought. He played a lot better at the second half of the season than the first half, but still the efficiency is the efficiency. Shot 35% from the field. I think he's a well-regarded defender, so I think that's a nice gift for them. If you're expecting them to go out and get, like, top-of-the-line transfers, I think – that you were buying into some things that you probably shouldn't have been buying into early on. I think the money helps them. I think the NIL is something that's going to be a factor for them, but I think they're going to have to overcome a lot with NIL. And I think if they want a guy like, say, Malik Mack, they're going to have to throw a lot more money at him than a school like even Georgetown is going to have to at this point. I think this is the year where you need to build your identity as a program, and you need to build with at least a few pieces that you can keep moving forward before you can go and get a guy like Malik Mack in a year or two. I think if they're not getting a guy like that in year three of Byington's tenure, then I'm a little more concerned. But right now, I just think that they need to get whatever they can and put together a competent, competitive roster just so that they can have a better sell in a year or two. I think that's where I'm kind of at with the whole thing. Like, Collins and Nickel and even Jalen Carey to an extent, I think, are guys that can be pieces for you for a few years and guys that can help you get to where you need to get to. And it is going to be challenging when those, especially the two guys who are rising juniors, walk out the door and you kind of have to rebuild the roster from there. But I just think that they do have positive trajectory, and I like the gets that they've gotten. I think the previous staff wouldn't have been able to get guys like that. And it goes back to relationship building. Byington has the relationship with Nickel. Both of his parents worked at JMU. But I don't think that that staff would have been able to secure those type of commitments. Lubin was a nice get for them, and it was a big get for Byington to be able to bring him back. And maybe that's something you'd look at and think positively about, is that they were able to retain essentially the best player that needed to be retained. And the two guys who are in the portal who you think you really want to get back, I think both are considering returning, at least to an extent. So if they can get one of those two guys back, if they can get a few more transfers, I'm sure we'll talk about how many they need and such, I think you feel a lot better about where they're at. But I don't know if it's time to hit the panic button yet. I think attrition, like we mentioned with football all season, not an awful thing, especially when you go 9-23 and you have all the issues that this program had in terms of its culture and in terms of just the talent level as a whole. When the talent level is that low and everyone knows it, I don't think you can be super upset about them losing said talent level.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's year one and it's the beginning of year one. This is the off season, right? And he hasn't, of course, no one's played a game yet. So there's going to be negative reactions. I don't think this off season was ever going to be an off season where Byington lands a couple big fish. I could be wrong. Maybe, you know, maybe we're looking back at this off season and saying, oh, look, they were able to land some big fish. But Joey, I just think it's about getting players in that fit his system. Whether they average 2 points a game last year or 15 points a game last year. Now, again, you'd rather have the 15, right? But you look at Tyler Nickel, I like the pickup. I think you look at MJ Collins, and I like what you – I think you said this about MJ Collins in your rapid reaction. You know, he kind of came on late for Virginia Tech last year, and, you know, he's an athletic guy, kind of like a right-handed Tyron Lawrence a little bit. But
I don't know if I love that comp, though, because I think he's a way better defender than Tyron is. And I don't know that he's like a go-get-you-a-bucket type guy as much as Tyron is. But I do see the similarities. I didn't mean to completely derail your comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a player, you start to think of a guy like a Tyron Lawrence when you watch MJ Collins, and maybe this is Byington saying, hey, we've got a guy kind of like Tyron Lawrence now in this offense. But again, do they keep Tyron Lawrence? Do they keep Jason Rivera Torres? There's still a lot of decisions to be made. Another thing I want to point out too about this staff and how they've been operating, in basically complete silence. I don't know that, you know, Tyler Nickel, I think a lot of us felt like he was going to commit eventually. MJ Collins, I don't want to say came out of nowhere, because he was on, I think, our radar, but the timing of it, right, just kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. So I think they're working as hard as they can, but they also don't want the word out, you know, too much, just like a lot of other teams don't right now. But I certainly don't think it's proper to kind of come in on this staff and Byington and say, look, hey, what's going on? You know, this is a program that hasn't been relevant for 7 years, right? It's going to take a while to get them back up to ground level. They're not at ground level right now. And so that's what they're working to do. And they're also trying to figure out, who do we keep? Recruiting-wise, Tyler Tanner and Karis Bilal, good players, but there's not going to be any you know, dynamic freshmen coming in here, I don't think, unless Byington brings over a guy or two. That's another element of this. Does Byington bring in a recruit or two? But, Joey, that's where I'm at. I'm not overreacting. I'm trying not to. You know, we've seen some overreactions. But at the end of the day, like you said, this is the day and age, you know, and it changes in an instant. But at the end of the day, you also may not know what's happening. You know, there's a kid, Jaden Zachary, that I think is on our radar right now. We don't have anything totally to substantiate that, but you know, through the murmurs, we have heard that. But again, I just don't think it's time to start freaking out if you're a Vandy fan.
Yeah, I like the mold of the player they're going after as well. I think the previous staff at times had made the mistake of going for a guy from a lower level who maybe didn't have translatable skill set per se. Like, I think Evan Taylor was a nice get at the time. I think he's kind of what they needed at the time to complement their guard play. But I think when you look at kind of the foot speed there and the athleticism, it was going to be tough for him to succeed at this level. This staff is getting guys who have succeeded at a similar level to what they're going to be playing at Vanderbilt. And I think there is some inherent goodness to getting a mid-major guy. But also, MJ Collins and Tyler Nickel have both proven to be guys who can contribute at the ACC level. And I think that's something that I'm looking at positively for this program. Malik Pressley and Isaiah West, I want to get into as well. I think those are both guys they could have used, but I don't think I'm heartbroken about losing either of them. I want to hear your thoughts on them as well. But I like Presley. I think he can guard. I think he can shoot a little bit better than maybe we thought he could. He's athletic. But they've got to be able to open up spots here. And I think same thing with West. He could have been a guy who was a player for them. But if you look at where these guys are going to end up, I think a lot of these guys aren't going to end up at comparable places to Vanderbilt. And that tells you what you need to know about the mass exodus of sorts. Jamie Vincent, I think, might be a similar situation. And I think a lot of schools aren't going to be as patient as Stack and his staff were to develop him. He has a ton of upside and I think fits the system that Byington was going to run somewhat well. But again, I think turnover, not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're Malik Presley and Isaiah West, I think you're looking at mid-major schools. You know, for them, I think that's advice-wise. I mean, that's what I would probably tell them. I'm not the one telling them that, but I think that's probably where they land. And then, you know, you look at their talent level. Presley, like you said, he's a long, athletic-type guy, not even super long. But, you know, he made some flashes at the end of last season. Isaiah West, I thought initially, was a guy they might just keep because he's a local kid. But at the end of the day, you've got to clear out space for better players. I mean, you know, Mark Byington said that in his introductory press conference. He said, we can't win with – you know, I can't win with bad players, right? I'm not that good of a coach, and he admitted that. And I thought that was kind of a, I don't know about a jab at Jerry Stackhouse, but you felt like Byington was told about that, and that you know we didn't have talent. You know, there wasn't enough talent in this program. You got to bring dudes in here, and Byington has has tried that so far and has done his best with even a guy like a Jalen Carey, who we haven't touched on a ton, who's going to be a sophomore this year. So. Again, Joey, I'm looking at it. It's still a work in progress. Like, I don't even, you know, we may not even have, I mean, when do you think we'll have a roster set? I don't know when.
It wasn't set till like June last year, so yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, so, you know, this is going to be another couple months here before we even have a roster set. There could be a guy that leaves that we are surprised by. You know, there could be a guy come in. I think there's... I don't want to say big fish, but I think there is another proven player out there to come in, whether it's Jaden Zachary from Boston College, who we actually saw last year. I still think they need a five-man. You know, obviously in Byington's system would have to be an athletic, a long athletic guy that can run the floor. And then, you know, probably another two-guard. Like, I don't know how many guys they bring in, but we actually have a mailbag question about that, so we will touch on that. But, Joey... anything else basketball-wise you want to hit on? I know we got some mailbag questions, but just kind of what's been going on the last couple weeks here.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of as expected, par for the course, if you would say. I think they're gonna put together an offseason that I don't think people are going to love, per se, but I think they're going to kind of see what they're going for. And that's kind of what I've seen so far, is just like, you know what they're looking at. And I think it's going to be a longer process than it has been in the past. I think they're going to swing this on some guys. But that's okay. There's a lot of guys in the portal. It's a long offseason, especially nowadays. And I think this probably might take a while. They need another big, I would say. I mean, I think they know that. They went after Malik Dia, at least to an extent. I think they need a true point guard. They need a guy on the wing. But we'll get more into that. I don't think the state of the program is bad or anything, as opposed to what we thought it would be. But I think they're still far off from being a tournament team at this point, unless they can make some additions that maybe we hadn't thought they could make early on.
I think biggest thing for me right now, Joey, is that it does look like they have a plan, and a pretty clear plan. You know, you mentioned the mold of player they're getting. I think that has been noticeable. There really was never a plan, a tangible plan, you know, under the Jerry Stackhouse tenure. So I think that has been a positive. Let's go to... a little bit of baseball here. Vanderbilt got back on track and beat Lipscomb last night 15-4. But over the weekend, Joey, they just got walloped at Texas A&M, ran into an absolute buzzsaw. And, you know, to me, they played the wrong team at the right time, or the wrong team at the wrong time, certainly not the right time, but lost 15-0 in game one in a run rule, and then lost 9-0 in game two. But game three was a little bit different than the first two. Vanderbilt got out to a 4-0 lead. And then A&M did more A&M things. They end up winning 12-6. I thought the home run that Carter Holton gave up, because he did pitch in that game three. Correct, Joey? He pitched game three?
He pitched game two.
Game two. Who was pitching game? Who started game? Okay, that was McIlvaine. Okay, so Carter started, but McIlvaine gave up a home run that, you know, he was upset about. But right before that home run, Jaden Davis just made a pretty bad error at second base, and that ended up keeping the inning alive for the Aggies, and then they end up giving up, I think, four more runs in that inning, and that's what kind of did Vanderbilt in. So I think if Davis makes that play, I don't want to say we're talking about a Vanderbilt win, but we're certainly talking about that game three in a better light. So now it just kind of looks like a dominant, you know, series win for Texas A&M. But, Joey, they bounce back, just dominate Lipscomb last night in seven innings, and now they turn their attention to Florida, three-game set this weekend. You know, I don't take a ton from last night's game, but what I do take away is that Lipscomb isn't a great team. They're not MTSU, though. You know, they're kind of middle of the pack there, and that's a, you know, again, you can't take much from last night, but I think what I did take is that they were aggressive. You saw another home run from Logan Poteet, who apparently loves hitting home runs against local teams in the midweek. But for me, Joey, it was just the bounce back. And I know it's not an SEC opponent, but I think any time you get a midweek win like that and get the spirits back up and just play well, just get back to – because say they, you know, they win 4-1 or 3-2 tonight, we're not talking about that game last night the same way we are now, like we were, you know, against Belmont. That Belmont game was – kind of a, you know, the beginning of the end of that weekend. You know, they ended up getting swept by South Carolina. But, you know, for me, Joe, I'm just encouraged by the way they were able to bounce back. And now you got some confidence. You got two SEC series coming up at home, and you need to do well. You know, I think you need to win this series this weekend. I think losing the Mississippi State series would not be good because that's a series you can win. You need to win your winnable series, especially when they're at home. And, you know, I just think last night was good confidence-wise.
Yeah, and it felt like they were a lot more confident last night than they were this weekend for good reason. I thought Texas A&M was the more confident team all weekend, and Billy, why wouldn't they be? They had hit 70-plus homers coming out of the weekend, and Vanderbilt was last in the SEC in homers hit after the weekend. Two shutouts on the first two nights of the series, I think, really just is telling of where their offense was in that series. And Tim Corbin talked about it, like Texas A&M is probably as impressive of a team as you'll see, and you're seeing them on the road in a crazy environment. So I don't know that I'm fully hitting the panic button, but I think this weekend was a huge opportunity for them to show me that they're elite, and I don't think they've shown me that yet. I think they've had a few opportunities to do it, and none of which they've come through on. I just think their margin for error, and I know people are annoyed with this term after football season, their margin for error is smaller than it has been in the past just because they don't have the power. I don't know that they have excellent pitching. I think they have really good pitching. But, again, it's just like they don't have that bailout J.J. Bleday guy to kind of guide them through these type of weekends and get them a big hit when they need it, get them a big homer when they need it. And you saw that in the first two games, how their offense went completely dry. They don't have a human tourniquet. It's going to be difficult for them to – really become elite at some point, but I think last night was what they needed. They need to get this weekend in some form. They need to get at least two, I would think. I thought it was really cool that they went to Lipscomb last night, and obviously I'm a little biased in that aspect, but it was interesting to talk to Corbin about it after, and I think that meant a lot to Jeff Forehand. You had him on the Plaster Show yesterday, and I think he was really appreciative of that gesture, and I just don't want to gloss over. I think Tim Corbin does get it. I think he gets, like, that this area is important. And I think to an extent, we haven't seen that in other sports from coaches. So I think it's pretty exceptional that Corbin does do that. And he acknowledges that other schools in the area would not be what they are without Vanderbilt, and that Vanderbilt has a chance to really spotlight them. And I think they did a nice job of that last night. That was not your average midweek. It was a sellout, set the attendance record at Lipscomb. And again, just shows you kind of the scope of this Vandy program right now. But I don't know that they are what they need to be right now to compete for an SEC title again or host a super regional or anything of that sort right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, where they're at right now, they're a good team. You know, I think right now they're kind of on that regional hosting bubble, but they're not an elite team. They're not on Texas A&M's level right now. You know, now are they on a Florida's level? Are they on a Mississippi State's level? You know, I think we would agree, yes, but you got to go out there and prove it. But, yeah, back to Lipscomb. You know, Forehand did tell us on the show that, you know, after last year's rainout, Corbin went to Forehand and said, you know, let's just play it at your place, you know, next year. Just a nice gesture and really speaks to, you know, how class act of a guy Tim Corbin is. And so it was cool. It was cool. It was a great crowd. I think about 2,000 people showed up It was beautiful. But I just think for this team, Joey, they need this weekend, because if you get a sweep, if you sweep Florida, I think that all of a sudden changes the perception of this team again from a fan base perspective. Like, baseball weekends are so fluid. You know, after you get swept, it's the season's over. You know, what is this team doing? But all of a sudden, if you get a sweep this weekend, or even if you win the series, you know, you're back to that kind of middle ground level. You're back to that, okay, you know, we can host, right? We can maybe even get close to hosting a Super. I don't think this team ends up hosting a Super unless something weird happens with the seeding, of course, which we've seen. But no, baseball-wise, got the win last night. Again, Florida, three-game series starts tomorrow night, actually. So another Thursday weekend for Vanderbilt. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It'll be interesting to see what they do with the pitching, Joey. You know, we've seen Cunningham start game ones. We've seen Carter start game ones, as in Grayson Carter. We've seen Carter Holton start game threes and game twos. I don't think Carter Holton would start tomorrow night. I could be wrong. Maybe they start to finally, you know, plant him in that ace spot. But Jack Caglione is going to be going in game three on Saturday, at least from what I've heard and what he, you know, where he's been slotted this season so far for Florida. So, you know, do you match Holton up with Cags? Either way, Cags, I don't know if you saw this, he hit about a 516-foot mammoth shot last night. So Florida is a team that will hit. I don't know. I don't think we'll be able to get a series preview video in, but we'll talk about it. We got a lot of mailbag questions about that as well. So, baseball this weekend. They got Mississippi State next weekend. And, of course, Tennessee coming up May 10th through 12th. So this is the time. I mean, Vanderbilt needs it. They got to have it this weekend. And, of course, we'll continue to talk about that throughout the podcast. But let's get to our mailbag. Joey, presented by Sutherland and Belk, a family-owned injury law firm. If you or a loved one is hurt or in an accident, give Taylor Russell a call, 615-846-6200, to see what your rights are and if they can help. But real quick, before we do get to the mailbag, big, big piece of news on the women's side of things. Michaela Blakes has officially signed with Vanderbilt. The five-star McDonald's All-American is the number 10 player in the class of 2024. Of course, recently played in the McDonald's All-American game, right, Joey? Mm-hmm. Of course, Elena was doing a great job with highlight clips and everything on that, but this is big. This is big. The highest-ranked recruit they've ever signed, and kind of reminds me a little bit of Darius Garland, you know, the hype around him for the men's side. Hopefully she's able to play more than five games than what Darius was able to do, but, you know, just kind of tells you where Shea Ralph has this program, because anytime you're able to get this level of player, you're doing something right.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing for me is just, like, the infrastructure of that program is so healthy that they're able to do that. And obviously, I think it's a little easier on the women's side to get five stars right now than men's basketball just because NIL and everything, all the crap that's going on in men's basketball, I don't think is as prevalent in women's basketball, although it is still prevalent in a sense. I would say that Michaela Blake is going to come in and give them a lot early. I think she's going to be their starting point guard next year. And she comes at a great time to replace Jordan Cambridge, who – I think was one of their more highly regarded recruits at the time as well. But Michaela Blake's, again, really nice gift for Vanderbilt. I think she's going to give them a lot early on. I think she's going to be able to score it. I think she can really defend. I think she'll be able to head their offense as a freshman at least a good bit of the time. I think she could at least be a secondary ball handler for them and probably at times will be the primary ball handler. So I think she's going to give them a lot. I think she's probably the most talented player on the roster, and a backcourt of her and Ayanna Moore is tremendous. And what Shea Ralph has done to turn this thing and be able to have a healthy enough program to land five stars who aren't from the immediate area of Nashville, I think is a real positive for her and her program.
The New Jersey to Vanderbilt pipeline continues, not only athletically, but all kinds of the student body from up there as well. But future's bright for Shea Ralph, no doubt. Joey, from women's basketball to men's basketball is our first mailbag question from Vandy Doors. Ned is where we start. He's actually got four questions, so we'll rumble through all these questions from Vandy Doors. Ned, number one, if you had to make a guess at Vandy's 10-man rotation next year, including potential portal transfers, who would be included? Here's what I've got, and this is projection. One of the players is not actually here yet. But I'm going to predict that Vanderbilt lands Jaden Zachary. Again, I have no clue if that will happen or not, but I'm going to do that for the purpose of this activity. And I think it's a good activity to kind of, you know, this is kind of a projection, right? This is our prediction of what we might see. I'm going to go number one, the one for Vanderbilt next year, Jaden Zachary. Again, this is all conjecture, transfer from Boston College. The two, I don't think they have a two yet. I mean, they have a two, but I don't know if they have their two. Do they put Tyler Nickel at the starting two? Does MJ Collins eventually start? I don't think they would ideally want MJ Collins to have to start if
really?
They retain. I mean,
I got MJ Collins as my starting two.
Interesting. I mean, is that good or bad if he's starting? Who knows? I mean, maybe MJ Collins is a starting two. If Tyron Lawrence comes back, is he the starting two? And then, of course, Tyler Nickel. Tyler Nickel, for me, would be slotted at three. And then the four, for me, would be Van Allen Lubin right now. And then the five, I don't think, is on the roster yet. I could be wrong. Maybe they play Van Allen Lubin at the five a lot. Maybe they start Jalen Carey. Maybe they're at the point where they have to start Jalen Carey at the five and have a couple of 6'9", 4", and 5 guys. But on the bench, you've also got JQ Roberts, at least who's still on the team right now, Karis Bilal, Tyler Tanner. I already mentioned Tyron Lawrence, but, I mean, he would be kind of interchanging in that starting lineup if he does come back. And then Jason Rivera-Torres, of course, if he does come back. But one thing I looked at, and that is 10 guys right now, Zachary, who's not here yet. So I guess technically 9 that are here right now, Nickel, Lubin, MJ Collins, Jalen Carey, JQ Roberts, Bilal, Tanner, Tyron Lawrence, and Jason Rivera-Torres. But the only guys that are locked into the roster right now out of those guys are Nickel, Lubin, Collins, Carey, Bilal, and Tanner. So that, you know, that's kind of where they're at. That's what their roster is right now. Even, you know, if you wanted to put Lawrence and Rivera Torres in there, you know, but they're in the portal right now. So, you know, it's hard to even say right now, but I would say my starting five projected would be Jaden Zachary. I'll put MJ Collins in there, I guess, for the purpose of this activity right now. And then Tyler Nickel at the three, Van Allen Lubin at the four, and then at the five, I don't know. I mean, right now, Carey, you'd have to, but they're going to get a five, you would think. Of course, Jamie Vincent just requested his release for NLI. Do they get another freshman in here? You got to believe they will, because they only have two right now. You know, how do they balance the portal class with the freshman class will be interesting. But that's kind of my stab at it, Joey. And again, I don't. Apparently, another guy to watch is another guy from Boston College. Is Zachary's teammate last year. I would keep an eye on Devin McLaughlin from Boston College. So keep an eye on him. And at that point, Joey, we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. But that would be my stab at that question.
So I had for my starting five transfer point guard MJ Collins at the two. I think MJ Collins is a starter for them for sure. He started 28 out of 32 games for Virginia Tech last year, and that's a team that was better than Vandy's going to be this year, I would guess. There's an NIT team, maybe not quite better than Vandy. Nickel at the three, Lubin at the four. I'd say a transfer at the five, and then off the bench, transfer wing, transfer guard, Jalen Carey, and then my last three spots, I'm going to say so one of them is going to be either Colin Smith, Jason Rivera-Torres, or Paul Lewis. I put it so far down because I don't know which one they're going to get or if they're going to get any. But I would guess I put out decent odds that they'd maybe get one back. JQ Roberts and then either Tyler Tanner or Karis Bilal. I think both of them have really nice tools, but I also think they each have a flaw in their game that might hold them off the court early on. Bilal with the shot selection, Tanner with his defense. So we'll see what happens, but I think they're going to add a transfer point guard. I don't think Collins should be your primary ball handler. I think he should be your secondary and a guy that is able to look to score a little more off the bounce. I think you need a transfer center. Your tallest guy is 6'9 right now. And Lubin, I don't think, should be tasked with playing the five again, although he did an admirable job this year. Transfer wing, I think they need another guy who can shoot it behind Nickel. Maybe not quite as athletic as Nickel, but if you can get a fit there, I think it's a nice get. And then another transfer guard. You've seen them look at some guys who I think would be backup guards for them, not necessarily starting point guards. So I'm just kind of going off of the archetype of guy they've looked at. And then, again, I think they kind of have some things at the end of the roster to work with, but they're going to need a lot more than what they currently have. But that's my best stab at it. I think they have three starters on the roster right now, and then maybe a fourth if Smith or Rivera-Torres can kind of come back, I guess.
All right, who is QB1 against Virginia Tech, And who leads Vandy in rushing and receiving next year? I think the starter against Virginia Tech will be Nate Johnson. Of course, Diego Pavia will be on the roster. It could very well be Diego Pavia if he wins the battle, but I think it's going to be Nate Johnson starting the game. I think odds are Diego Pavia also plays in that game. I mean, I think those odds are pretty high. And then throughout the season, I think Pavia will end up playing a good bit. Don't know how that's going to shape out. But again, I think the starter against Virginia Tech will be Nate Johnson. That is my projection or conjecture. Who leads Vanderbilt in rushing? I'll say Cedric Alexander. I was tempted to go with one of the quarterbacks, but it's hard for me to say because I don't know which quarterback they're going to go with. I think the quarterback, whether it's Nate Johnson or Pavia, you could answer this by saying the starting quarterback, the quarterback that plays the most, just because of how much they're going to be asked to run and how much they're going to have to run, because it doesn't look like this offensive line is going to be great. So I'm going to go with Cedric Alexander. I like Cedric Alexander a lot. I thought as a freshman he played as well as he could last year behind an offensive line that, again, was very leaky. This is tough, too. I think you could either go with Sherrill or Skinner. I wouldn't expect Hoskins to lead the team in receiving. You do have a couple of transfers in Jeremiah Dillon and Loic Fungi, who's coming over for Texas Tech. I do think they will add another transfer receiver or two. So maybe they add a big fish who comes in and kind of dominates for them. But I'm going to go with Skinner. I think Quincy Skinner will lead this team in receiving next year. But that is a good question, Joey, and I don't know. I'm interested to see what your answers are and how they differ from mine, though.
Yeah, quarterback is so hard because Pavia is not here yet, and he's only played, one or two games in his career against SEC teams. Well, obviously, one of them was Auburn, but I think I would probably say Johnson for now. I think he's been better recently. Obviously, we've given him some flack early on for being loose with the ball, and so has Clark, but I think he's been better enough recently to where he'll start. And if he's the starter, I think he's the leading rusher. I just think they're going to have a hard time running it unless they really get some guys in the portal on the line. I think they're going to have a hard time running it outside of the quarterback. And with him kind of making stuff happen improv-wise and them designing some stuff for him, I think he would be the guy who's going to lead them in rushing. I would be less confident in saying that if Pavi is the starter, he'll lead him in rushing. But I think if Johnson's the starter and he's healthy, he'll also do that. I would probably – if I had to bet on it, I would say Johnson right now, but it's so hard to know because I haven't seen Pavia here against their defense. Receiving, I said if Skinner's healthy, I think he's the guy who leads them in receiving. The guys here, otherwise, I don't know that they're SEC ones, and I don't know if Skinner is either, but I don't know if I would want to bet on Sherrill doing that yet. I think Sherrill is probably closer to McGowan than Will Shepard right now, or London Humphreys or whatever, and what was McGowan, their third leading receiver last year. So I think he takes more of that role than anything. But if it's not Skinner, I guess on the current roster, Sherrill, Dillon hasn't impressed me a whole lot yet. I think he's shown some things. Hoskins is always good in practice, but I think you'd be remiss to have him leading them in receiving. And if not, it's going to be a transfer that they probably don't have yet. Maybe the Texas Tech transfer gives him something, but I don't know that his tape jumps off like Skinner's does at this point.
All right, third question, where does the Vandy baseball season end? I think this is a good one. I'm going to say on the road at someone else's park in a super regional. It's hard for me to even say they'll get to a super at this point, just the way they're playing right now. Again, that could change after this weekend, the way these seasons fluctuate so much and are so fluid. But I think they get to a super. I don't think they host a super, but I think they end up losing on the road. This is my guess, in a super. That wouldn't be the worst season. That's similar to getting to the Sweet 16 in basketball and losing a tight one, So I would say they lose on the road in a super. I think fans want to hear this season ends in Omaha with a trophy, of course, but this team isn't there yet. You got to remember, Joey, it's never the best team that wins it. It's the team that is playing the best at the right time. And this team can get there. Corbin, I thought, made a good point last night that, maybe we look back at that A&M series and say, that was the weekend. That was the weekend we got turning, we got rolling. It kind of pissed us off and we started playing better. Who knows? Who knows how this season turns? I think they'll be in the postseason. It might end up it might end up being tough for this team to even host a regional if you look at it. But I think if they're able to host a regional, I think they'll be able to get out of it. But then a road super is always tough, of course. So I'm going to say this season ends in a road super.
That's actually exactly what I had as well. I think they find a way to host a regional. I think recency bias plays into some people's eval, and I'm not saying this about you. I think you've done a nice job kind of hampering it, but this is the lowest their stock has been all year. They're 13th in the Baseball America top 10 or top 25, and that's the lowest they've been all year. This is the first time they've been out of the top 10 all year. I'm kind of betting on the full body of work a little bit more than what's happened in the last week or so, but if they don't pick it up soon, it's going to be difficult for me to do that. I just think they're going to have a hard time on the road if they get to a super, and I think their pitching is good enough to where they can really turn it on at the right time. So I do want to hedge my bet there a little bit. I think especially once Futrell gets back, maybe he can be better. Hopefully for them, that's this weekend. But they have enough pitching to make it a conversation, and their bats have been good enough to make it a conversation as well. But I tend to think the same thing. I think they're going to struggle on the road in those type of environments, and we'll see. But right now, the stock is as low as it's ever been, and that's inherently a bad thing, but also I think it's something you kind of take with a grain of salt, considering they've got a few more ranked series and maybe they can do some damage there at home in the next few weeks, where they've played a lot better than on the road, by the way.
Yeah, they have. Fourth question here is hilarious from Vandy Doors. Ned, what's your favorite Curb Your Enthusiasm episode? I've never seen that show, and Joey, I don't think you have, so we can't answer that.
I have not. I'm a big Survivor guy recently, though.
Okay. Big Survivor guy. I'm not even really a show guy. I used to watch like a lot of those Netflix series, especially when I was in college, but not the biggest TV show watcher anymore. I might have to start watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, though. Maybe we'll get our answer to Vandy Doors Ned here soon. Okay, five-star door. Can you talk about the strength and conditioning philosophy this offseason, how it differs from the previous staff, and is the team stronger and more resilient as a result? Haven't gotten to talk with Steiner at all yet, but from everything I've heard, and I've tried to ask all the players that that have been made available for us to talk to about Steiner and about the strength and conditioning program. But you know, one thing I'll say is that everybody's positive about it. And naturally, they're not going to sit here and say negative things about their new strength coach. But I think a lot of it revolves around the, you know, quote unquote, getting back to the meat and potatoes of working out. They're not doing as much of the per se band work or flexibility or, you know, things like that. I think Horgan was good. He did a really good job at Wake Forest, but I think what he wanted to do wasn't what Vanderbilt needed as a program, and Clark Lee had realized that. I think it goes back to before last season with the soft tissue injuries. And, that was hinting at their preseason training regimen. And, Clark ended up making a change, and they completely changed the way they train and the way they practice, what they do before practice, what they do after practice, what they do in the weight room. And, everybody's loved him. Charlie Clark talked about him, glowingly. Just his energy, and you've seen the two-and-a-half-minute clips on Twitter of Steiner. Haven't seen one in a while, but just his motivation. And, I think the timing is really good with where this program is at. They needed that jolt of energy. They got it with Jerry Kill. Tim Beck is a little bit more low-key, but I think a lot of the other coaches do bring that energy that they need. And, Joey, I mean, you've heard about it too. I mean, this has been talked about and he's been praised. And so I think we're not going to see the fruits of it until the season. Can they stay healthy? Do they have a ton of soft tissue injuries like they did last year? I think we're going to get a taste of that if they don't, and saying, okay, they've moved past that, and you're not – I mean, they were ravaged by injuries last year, mm-hmm. just ravaged. I mean, that defense, I don't think they had a healthy defense all season. Even offensively, they had some injuries. Quincy Skinner is a guy that – probably loves Steiner because maybe this gives him a better chance to stay healthy and stay on the field. But, Joey, I just think it goes back to a lot of those soft tissue injuries, and the margins are small at Vanderbilt. You cannot have those. You just can't. But, yeah, in terms of, the question as a whole, is the team stronger? Yeah. I mean, you look at Quincy Skinner. Luke mentioned this in one of the podcasts past. Just bigger arms. I mean, these guys – look bigger. Even some of the offensive linemen just, while they, you know, they've slimmed down a little bit, I still think there's some guys that need to cut down a little bit more. But I'm trying to think of other guys. Maybe a Bryce Cowan, who just looks, I mean, he looks like a freak. Cole Spence, you can tell, has been in the weight room. Dante Carter, in his short time as well, looks different. So more resilient. I don't know. I mean, we'll see that. I think we'll get a taste of that in the season. But I think he was needed, Joey. And again, for me, it's soft tissue oriented. A lot of this with Steiner.
I also think there's something to like playing weights. And I think there were times last year where me and Chris would look at a guy on, particularly on one of the lines, and be like, are they really having to play at that weight? And I think that's an interesting thing too. I feel like I've seen less of that this spring than I did in the fall, to where there's a guy and it's like, I don't know that he's at his most effective playing weight, and some of that they can't control. But also I think there's something to that, to where you look at it and maybe it's a little different now. The two things that have really stuck out to me when we've talked to guys, and one of them was when I talked to somebody, it was Charlie Clark yesterday when you talked to him, and he said that's the hardest workouts they've had since he's been there. And I think that was a testament to the resiliency that they're going to have to build. He said there's a lot of respect for the strength program. And I don't know that there wasn't under Horgan, but I think the intensity is higher now with that new program. And I think it's just more difficult on them, which I think sucks now for them, but I think it's going to be better for them long term. And I think Drew Dickey a few weeks back had also mentioned something about it, to where, to the effect of, there's no standing around. And that was kind of insinuating that in the past there had been standing around in the weight room. He said they're in there for an hour and a half and it's just kind of straight working out. So again, to me, the intensity is the thing that stands out. And I don't know how that's going to translate to results and in what way. And I think a lot of that's over both of our heads in terms of sports science and stuff along those lines. But like you said, meat and potatoes, higher intensity, I think those are the things that kind of come to mind when I think about the new strength program and think about who we talked to about it.
Yeah, good question there from Five Star Door. Let's roll along here. VA72, is the football team's offense going to typically huddle? What will be their tempo? Will they speed up their tempo at times when they cross the 50-yard line and begin approaching the opponent's goal line? So, okay, first question there, is this team's offense going to typically huddle? I would say so. I think they'll go some up-tempo, but I don't think this is going to be a Josh Heupel, Lane Kiffin type no huddle offense. They're certainly not going to be that. They don't have the personnel to do that. I don't think they want to do that. I don't think Clark Lee will ever do that. I just don't think that's in his DNA as a football coach, especially at Vanderbilt. That's not a part of the model. When Vanderbilt has won games, it's not because they're sitting back there airing the football out. I mean, look, they tried to do that last year and did not pan out, as we could see. So, yeah, I think they'll typically huddle. Their tempo be moderate, kind of in between. You know, like I said, I think they'll go up tempo at times. But Joe, I just don't think they'll be doing a ton of it. You might see something where maybe there's a deep pass, 25, 30, 35 yards, and then they get up to the line quick and then run it with either the quarterback or the running back. You're going to see some interesting things with this Tim Beck offense. You're going to see some trick plays. You're going to see Nate Johnson and Diego Pavia in there at the same time, I would guess, occasionally. So, tempo-wise, Joey, I think we'd both agree it'll be moderate. When they cross the 50, they might even slow down. This person asks, will they speed up when they cross the 50? I don't know. I think this could be an offense where maybe they start to really slow down. I think they want to eat clock. Clark has talked about that. They want to eat clock, and that's part of the formula, the formula of winning for Clark Lee. So that's what I would say. And then he has another part here. Are they running any unbalanced formations by moving a tackle over to a different side or by inserting multiple tight ends? We don't know. We can't get specific about anything anyway. And my thing about Johnson and Pavia is total conjecture. No one's told me that. That's basically, my intuition saying, hey, they might do some of that. But we can't really answer that last question. But tempo-wise, Joey, I don't think they'll be an up-tempo team, but I think they'll use tempo when they think they need to.
Yeah, they're going to have to pick and choose. Something that I looked at was how many plays each team ran per game. Vanderbilt ran 63.5 plays per game last year. New Mexico State ran 62.5. So pretty similar in terms of tempo. And I think that stat is a lot different than it is in basketball. I think possessions per game is a lot more of a thing in basketball than football that you measure. But I do think that that's an indicator that it's not going to be overly different. I think they are going to want to chew the clock still a little bit. And obviously they're going to look to score, but I don't think they're going to be as much of an air and out team as they were last year. I think the tempo is going to be similar. I don't think they're going to go completely no huddle, but I also think when they need to push it, they're going to push it. And that's probably the blueprint there. In terms of the formations, again, we can't comment on it. I think that's an educated guess by you, Billy, based on what they did at New Mexico State, more so than anything. I watched back some Diego Pavia before this podcast, and it was a lot of that, a lot of handoffs to Diego Pavia somehow, and he would make the throw. But one thing I did want to mention with that question is tight end usage. We talked to Tim Beck on Saturday, and I thought it was really interesting. I asked him about Cole Spence, and he kind of raved about the tight end position as a whole and what he wants to do with it. I think they're going to use tight ends a lot more than they did under Joey Lynch. And I think that was something that people didn't love, that was that they didn't use them a whole lot and they didn't have enough capable ones. I think this year they've got two capable ones, and maybe they'll add another one. But Cole Spence is going to be a guy they feature a lot. And Cam Johnson, I think, will have reps as well. Tim Beck also wants multiple different types of tight ends he was talking about. So maybe that leads you to believe that they'll use multiple of them in certain sets as well. So that's what my thought there. But tight end usage, I think, is going to be more than it has been in the past. Maybe a noticeable amount, maybe not as noticeable as we would think.
Yeah, and I want to add to that too. Coach Klonakis has a history coaching Colin Kaepernick, Lamar Jackson, and those quarterback run schemes. That's what this team's going to be doing. Again, I'm not getting into anything specific because honestly, I can't really. I'm not an offensive coordinator. But when you talk about pulling guards or pulling left tackles, you know, that's kind of what you do when you run with your quarterback. So there's going to be a lot on these offensive linemen, but they got to get some more in here, and I think they will. And that goes into our next question here from VU Superior, which is a good one. Name the starting five offensive linemen and key reserves as it stands now. How many offensive linemen do we need to add in the transfer portal? Okay, name the starting five offensive linemen right now if they were to play a game. Grayson Morgan, they would probably play him. He's been sitting out, but I don't think it's anywhere serious, so I'm going to say preliminarily, if that's even a word, Grayson Morgan would be your center. Steven Lasoya would be one of the guards, and Gunnar Hansen, I think, is locked in there at left tackle. And then I think those three guys will start right there, Morgan, Lasoya, and Hansen. You look at the other two spots, right now, if they were to play a game, right now, is it Castillo? Is it Charlie Clark, who they made available yesterday? And that's usually an indication of some playing time. So maybe Castillo and Clark are those last two guys. You've also got Misa Sandoval, who has looked good as a sophomore here in camp so far. You know, you've got Anthony Miles, a younger guy who has gotten some reps as well. So I'll go with Charlie Clark and Castillo there to be those last two guys right now if they were to play a game. But that's not going to be the case. I don't think that's going to be your starting five when the season starts. I think Vanderbilt is going to add a truckload of offensive linemen in the portal. I don't have really a number. How many do we need to add? This person asks. I think, Joey, 4 to 5. I mean, I that's where I am with this offensive lineman. This is not a great offensive line. I think they've got three guys that they can trust in Morgan, Lasoya, and left tackle Gunnar Hansen. Charlie Clark is inexperienced. He hasn't played a ton. Gage Pitchford is another guy I didn't mention. You know, he played a little bit last year, actually. But then Castillo's got to cut down. So I'm just not bullish on this offensive line right now. I don't know how much more bullish I'll be when they get these transfers in, because they are going to get transfers in. But are they impactful? I think they need them to be impactful for this team if this team wants to win and get to that threshold of 5-6 wins and beat an SEC team. It's huge. It's massive. You've got to have an offensive line you can rely on to win SEC games. But, yeah, I'll say those five guys I named, the first three guys, Lasoya, Hansen, and Grayson Morgan, And then right now, Castillo and Charlie Clark would be my next top two guys. Maybe Pitchford instead of Castillo. They're just so interchangeable. They've interchanged so much. They've rotated. They've switched sides with all these linemen. So it's hard to say, but I honestly think they could get upwards of five new offensive linemen. I'm not even kidding on that.
Yeah, they're going to have to do some serious work to it. I'm glad you brought up Pitchford because I was going to bring him up as well. I think I'm a little higher on him than you are, but they need work. Like, right now they can't even run the ball effectively. And that's against Vandy's D-line, not Georgia's or Tennessee's or whatever. Like, they're going to need some serious work on the O-line. That's why I picked Nate Johnson to be the leading rusher, just because, like, you don't need the offensive line as much if you're doing quarterback runs as you do running back runs. Like, it shouldn't be dust cloud football. And right now they're going to have a really tough time playing that way and controlling the tempo of the offensive line they have. And Vandy's never had fantastic offensive lines, really. But this one, I think, needs to be a lot better for them to have any chance against anybody right now.
All right, here's a good one.
And also they've only got eight bodies right now, so it should get better. Like, they don't have anybody healthy right now, so I'm expecting it to be better than it currently stands.
Yeah. I mean, look, Morgan hasn't practiced, and I think that he's going to play. He's going to start. So, you know, that's pretty noteworthy there. But, yeah, they got to get better, Joey. That's the bottom line. Let's see here. Next question from Pessimistic Door. With a couple of the reported transfer point guard targets committed elsewhere, what's some names to look for that they may pivot towards? Surely they don't expect Collins to start there. I would agree with you there. I don't think they ideally want MJ Collins to start at point guard for them. I think you do. You will have a transfer point guard coming in. Again, a guy to watch is Jaden Zachary from Boston College. There are a lot of really good point guards out there. Jeremy Roach from Duke is out there. I don't anticipate Vandy getting him, but he is out there. He's a DC guy. But again,
Billy, no chance.
Hey, the board says they want some more sunshine pumping. That's some sunshine pumping right there if I predict Jeremy Roach to Vandy. Joey, hear me out on this. St. Mary's point guard, Aiden Mahaney, I think is his name. West Coast guy. Yeah, really good. But again, that's another guy that's out there point guard-wise. But Vanderbilt, the thing about Byington and the way they're operating right now is you look at it, you're trying to get a kid to Vanderbilt, but say that kid has been offered the same amount or even a little bit less money than you offer him, and say that school made the NCAA tournament last year or has a better history the last 7 years, more times than not, the kid's going to go there. So it's hard. It's hard right now for Byington and the staff. But, yeah, I would – surefire guy, and I'm not saying they're going to get him, but it would be Jaden Zachary. I don't know if you know any other point guards out there, Joey, but that's kind of what I would look at there.
Two others, Grant Huffman from Davidson, I think has visited or will visit. I don't know what their chances are there. I think Minnesota is also recruiting him pretty heavily, and I think he may end up there. And Darren Saran from UC Irvine indicated publicly that he plans to visit or is potentially visiting Vandy. He's already visited Stanford. Also has Northwestern, Cal, Marquette, and Texas on the list of schools that he might visit. So we'll see. He was a freshman last year who averaged 10 points a game there. Wasn't as good of a passer as Huffman was, and Huffman is. Huffman averaged 5 assists a game, so that would be kind of your true-ish point guard. And I wonder if he'd be the starter or they'd try to bring in someone alongside him. But Zachary's the guy I think that would be the biggest get for them and the guy that I think would be the one to really watch there. I don't know that they're going to get him, but I think he would make them a lot better than they currently are. On your point about Collins, I think he's probably a better off guy than he is a guy that's on the ball. I think he needs to be a guy who can create his own shot and have some freedom offensively and shouldn't be using that energy to facilitate. He also needs to be able to defend a guy at another position and defend the best player, which is hard to do when you're the primary ball handler. So that's what I've got on point guard transfers right now.
Yeah, another point guard I'll throw out there in the portal who has not committed anywhere yet is Jason Edwards from North Texas. He's actually from Atlanta. And again, I'm just throwing guys out there. He's from Atlanta. Byington has recruited Atlanta heavily. He averaged 19 points last year for North Texas. So Jason Edwards could be you know, potentially a guy to watch. Jaden Zachary, for what it's worth, is ranked just outside the top 100 in the transfer portal rankings. I am looking at On3 here, but you do also have Bronny James out there. No, I'm kidding. you know, so it's just hard. It's hard to track these. Seth Trimble from North Carolina.
That's a good one.
Yeah, is a guy that played with Tyler Nickel his freshman season at North Carolina, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe Seth Trimble is a guy to keep an eye on there. FAU has a guy that entered, Arturo Dean, who played pretty well last year. So, again, it's hard to track these, but just some names to kind of float out there. I did actually forget about Seth Trimble, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jaden Zachary is kind of at the top of our list right now, for what it's worth. Okay, Knoxville Door 94, back to football. On a scale of 1 to 10, based off what you guys have seen, how would you rate what you've seen so far? What are we dealing with? Well, it's spring practice. That's number one. I don't think you can ever take too much away from spring practice, but from what I've seen so far, this defense would play well. Now, defensive line-wise, I don't think they would get a ton of pressure, but I don't think this team would miss a ton of tackles. I don't think this team would have a ton of blown coverages. I think the special teams unit would be good. So defense and special teams, I think this team could hold up their end of the bargain at least better than last year. Special teams wasn't awful last year anyway, but defensively I think they're going to be better. I mean, they're going to be better. Still need to see something more from the defensive line. But again, I think linebackers, safety, even the corners have looked good and played with energy. So defensively, I like what I've seen. Offensively, I haven't really liked anything I've seen. Nate Johnson, you know, we know he can run. That's not anything we learned, you know, and he's ran it occasionally here. But Skinner and Sherrill are the top two receivers. But other than them, who are you going to go to? Right now, Cole Spence is playing well, actually. He's playing really well at tight end, I think. Cam Johnson is another guy to watch there, of course. But what are we dealing with? We're dealing with a team that doesn't have an identity offensively, but will probably, if they were to play a game this weekend, would compete. I don't think they would get just blown off the field. Now, obviously, it would depend on who they're playing. But when you ask what you're dealing with, it's hard to answer, Joey. But I just keep going back to defense. I think this is going to be a team that leans on their defense. They lean on another good punter. Again, I don't think people want to hear that. You know, we want to play the quarterback that gives us the best position to punt. I don't think Clarkley actually meant that in that moment. But at the other end of the spectrum on offense, you've got a whole nother summer and fall to insert all these, you know, these schemes and packages in your system. You've got Pavia coming in. You're going to have more offensive linemen come in. You're going to have a couple receivers come in. This portal window just started here in the spring, and there's just a lot we don't know yet offensively. So I think there's hope there. But what we're dealing with right now, I don't know if they could beat an SEC team. But defensively, I trust this defense. I do. Now, defensive line-wise, again, still need to see a little bit more, but this is a defense-led team right now. That's what you're dealing with.
Yeah, the offense is not as good as I would have thought it would have been. The defense is slightly better. I don't know that it's going to be an average SEC defense, but I think it's going to be better than the worst in the country in Power 5, and I think that's what it was last year, was the worst Power 5 defense. They'll probably add some pieces on both sides, but right now I don't think they're good enough to make a bowl game or really get anywhere close to it. That can change in the summer. They can add pieces and have a more complete roster, but right now they got a ton of work to do, especially offensively. And even defensively, they got a lot of young guys playing, and I wonder if they're going to add a few more pieces on defense at some point. Defensive line's okay. We haven't seen a whole lot of Darren Agu. Haven't seen a whole lot of C.J. Taylor either, but I think they're going to be better defensively right now offensively. Probably worse than they were last year, but get a lot of time to change both of those things. Special teams, I think slightly worse, but maybe not awful at this point.
All right, back to basketball. We're going everywhere here. From Philip VU 94, way too early knee-jerk assessment time. Here we go. Counting both potential and actual track record, where does Mark Byington rank among SEC coaches? Well, number one, he hasn't played a game, but you know, part of the question was counting both potential and actual track record. Counting actual track record, I don't know if he would be last, Joey. I mean, what he's done. He's only made one NCAA tournament. He probably would be, at the end of the day, you know, number 16 right now. But potential-wise, and again, hasn't played a game yet, I think Byington, in a few years, is going to be one of those middle-of-the-pack coaches. I'm not saying he's going to go out and do what Todd Golden has done at Florida, but I think he can definitely do what Matt McMahon has done at LSU. He's righted the ship. You know, he's gotten back a lot of homegrown kids, and they were competitive last year. You know, I don't know that he has a season like Dennis Gates had in year one, but I think he has a season this year. And again, I feel crazy saying this. I just think it's a season that provides some hope. You know, it's a year one. I'm confident in him. I trust him. I think he's got a decent staff. I think he knows what he's doing. He's going to have a lot to learn in year one. You're playing in the SEC, one of the hardest conferences in the country. But at the end of the day, Joey, his actual track record is that he's won one NCAA tournament game in his one appearance. He's played in two, obviously lost to Duke. He doesn't have as heavy of a track record. I mean, look, he was at Georgia Southern, and you know, they were never able to win the conference there, but they had winning seasons essentially every year, did similar things at James Madison. But, yeah, I mean, I hate answering this question this way, but he would probably be last right now. But he can change that in year one. He can change it pretty quickly in year one, about 5-6 games into SEC play, you know? So, but yeah, that's a tough question.
Yeah. I mean, just off of track record right now, he's last, and that's not a jab at him. It's just like, look at it. Mike White, has made tournaments at Florida. He's got Georgia, the NIT. I'd say that's enough of a tracker to put him over. Matt McMahon has, I think, made a couple tournaments at Murray State. That's the one you could probably argue in terms of track record, but also got LSU to the NIT this year.
Mark Pope, you could argue.
I guess, but I think winning at BYU is enough. And he's done stuff at Utah Valley and such. Lamont Paris, SEC Coach of the Year, did a lot at Chattanooga. So point being, like, the resume isn't as strong, but I think the ceiling is higher than a Matt McMahon, higher than a Mike White. I love Porter Moser, so I think his ceiling's probably higher. I think Chris Jans, Byington probably has a higher ceiling than. It's a tough job, but I wouldn't say Byington is, like, the worst coach in the SEC. I would say he doesn't have a resume better than anyone in the SEC right now, but I think the vision and everything that he has kind of outlined for this program, I would say could put him above some of these coaches. Rodney Terry, another one I'm not as high on. I think Byington in a few years could surpass him. So, but we just look at this isn't necessarily a slight of him, because you're just looking at all these coaches who have incredible resumes, like Nate Oates, Rick Barnes, Chris Beard, Cal, Pearl, Buzz Williams, Todd Golden, Porter Moser. Like, all these guys have done incredible things in their career. So that's what I have. But I don't know, Billy. That's a tough question to answer at this point in a tenure. And at this point in his career especially, he hasn't been a head coach for as long as a lot of these guys have and hasn't been able to do it at this level yet, where that's where you really prove that you are better than these guys. But projecting, I think he could be middle of the pack, maybe lower middle of the pack in a few years.
Another one from Philip VU94. Will Virginia Tech's football team find added motivation against us because we seem to be raiding their men's basketball program? Yeah, honestly, I did hear about that. Virginia Tech's head coach is not happy about it. No.
Bad sources, Billy.
He says, I just might be asking that tongue-in-cheek. But no, I don't think Virginia Tech football will be too worried about that. I think they'll be ready to play, though. That'll be a good Virginia Tech football team.
Vandy better be ready to play that game, too, because otherwise they're going to get ran off the field.
That's the game. That's the game, Joey. They have to just – they've got to be ready. You know, if they lose 21-17, I don't think fans will be just irate. But if they go out there and lose 42-7, buckle up, because it's going to get ugly on the boards. Okay, VU Matt 23, how would each of you go about filling the remaining spots for football and basketball? Well, we've talked about it a lot, and I think this is a good question, putting our GM hats on, Barton Simmons hat, and I guess Byington's the GM for basketball. Look, offensive linemen, I think you need to get at least five. I just think that's where they're at. They're just not good right now, but that's right now. Right, that could change in the summer after they get some guys in, get some chemistry built, get the system in with Klonakis, and then in the fall, you know, push toward the season. So offensive lineman, I would say you need to get at least five. Receiver-wise, I think you still need a couple receivers in there. I just think that room is lacking dynamic ability other than Skinner and Sherrill. I think Hoskins has looked decent, but, you know, Richie Hoskins is Richie Hoskins. And then at the end of the day, football-wise, I think defensively you could always use another edge rusher, maybe use another guy in the middle to plug that defense. Defensively, I still think they're okay. You know, but defensive line, I think, would be the concern there. Other than that, I think football-wise, I think you're fine. I mean, you know, any good player you can get, you'll take. And then basketball, we talked about it. Filling the remaining spots, you need a couple of guards. You need a couple of forwards. I mean, I think that's kind of where they're at, Joey. Forwards specifically, a five-man. Like, they need a 6'11 big guy. I mean, they just do. I mean, you have to have that in the SEC. Even a seven-footer, you know, would be nice. A Luke Kornet, you know, he'd be fun to watch in this Byington offense. But no, a couple of guards, specifically point guard and a two-guard and maybe even another two-guard. And you can do that in the portal or freshman class, right? I mean, you know, you still have, you know, room there for that freshman class, but we'll see. But, Joe, I don't know if you have anything differently there for football and basketball.
I'll go basketball first, then football. I think their biggest need is a starting point guard who can distribute. I think they have guys who are pieces, but if they don't have a point guard who can run the offense and defend, they're going to have a really tough time. And Tyler Tanner can run the offense to an extent, I think, but that's a lot of pressure to put on him early. I think they really need a transfer big man as well. It's probably my second most important one, but I think they have enough to maybe get by-ish there. Like, Carey and Lubin and maybe J.Q. Roberts is probably a pretty comparable front court to what they had this year, maybe even better, which is unreal to say. But yeah. I think that's probably my second one, and then I think they need another wing and another guard, and that's probably enough-ish, and then you got to get maybe one of those guys back who's currently in the portal. Football, offensively, I think your biggest need is the offensive line, probably by a good amount. And receiver, I think, actually maybe is comparable to offensive line in terms of what they need. But, and then another one I've kind of wrestled with is running back. I think Newberry and Alexander are good. I don't know that they're excellent. Newberry, I think, I'm kind of my hot take for the offense this year is that Newberry might be better than Alexander this year. Especially if the offensive line is bad, because I think he's less reliant on having to run between the tackles. I think he has enough straight line speed to where he can overcome some of that. Defensively, I think the D-line, they could probably use one or two more guys there. And then on the back end, I think they could use one more playmaker, maybe a corner, and maybe a guy who wears number two, who plays safety, or maybe he's going to play linebacker now. I think they could use that one of those guys as well, if you're getting what I'm putting down. But that's kind of what I see. I think they really need offensive line and receivers, and then they could always use playmakers defensively. If we talk about how good their defense has looked so far, I still think they're probably a below-average defense and maybe worse than that in the SEC.
Come on, Joey.
I mean, that's just, no, that's just the SEC, man.
No, you're right. You're right. It's hey, that's the thing about Vanderbilt, about covering Vanderbilt and what you see. And Chris has talked to us about that a lot. You know, you can be high on a unit, but that first SEC game you play, all that gets derailed because, you know, it just means more is the SEC. So, no, you're totally right about that.
I mean, how much talk was there last year about how many Vanderbilt defensive players would start on any other SEC team? It was Taylor and Patterson, and
yeah,
that was about it.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. And in terms of football, they do have practice again tomorrow. They'll have another scrimmage Saturday at Ensworth again, Joey, correct?
Yeah,
so at Ensworth. I think Joey's going to be there. I may end up going, but we'll both be at baseball as well.
That Malicia built.
Exactly. He was a great player at Ensworth.
Fantastic. Yeah, what a recruitment.
Yeah, wild recruitment from Dia. He's now at Ole Miss. So, hottie toddy for Malik Dia, but we'll see how much he gets to play there down there in Oxford. But at the end of the day, Joey, football-wise, again, we'll see what they got here. I'll be at practice tomorrow, and then football, one more scrimmage at Ensworth.
I think they'd beat Ensworth, probably.
Yeah, I think they would. I think they would, but at Ensworth on Saturday. And then baseball-wise, of course, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I'll be there tomorrow night. I think we'll both be there Saturday and see Jack Kags against potentially Carter Holton. We'll see. And then basketball-wise, we'll keep track of these transfers and see who Byington gets in here. Does Tyron Lawrence come back? Does Colin Smith come back? Does JRT come back? We'll see. But, yeah, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. That's been the Vandy Sports Podcast. Give our 5-star review that we always want you to give on our podcast on Apple Podcast. Also, if you haven't subscribed, please do. $9.99 per month, $99 a year. Helps us tremendously. Subscribe to our Vandy Sports YouTube channel. Finally, if you're interested in sponsoring the show, email Chris Lee at chrislee70@gmail.com. For Joey Dwyer, I'm Billy Derrick. Thanks for listening, everybody, to another edition of the Vandy Sports Podcast.